And also, I will say, like, Katie told me about your guys' project.
Yeah.
And then usually I do like light research before I do have a conversation, but I was looking you guys up yesterday and I was like, I kind of can't find anything.
Yeah. By design.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess the platform kind of speaks for itself, but if you guys could give me a quick intro into what it is.
Yeah. We've been working on this platform called River for the past like about a year, but you know, this idea has been like brewing for over a year. And it's like it's a social network that focuses on like multimedia files, and we kind of adopted the whole playlist idea because we thought that there was just like a lot of underdeveloped kind of experiences around what does it look like to create a playlist, you know, for other people or with other people, but like don't limit that just to like a music context.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and something similar is like, I love sharing Google Drives specifically because like, I want to share like images and videos in one kind of like neat folder, but it's kind of hard to do that elsewhere. And it doesn't feel like putting that on like social media, like a typical social media, like Twitter or Instagram, feels a little bit like not quite the utilitarian like function that I'm looking for when I'm trying to send people links.
Right.
So yeah, like River right now, you can post all kinds of different like file types, like 3D image, 3D objects and like images and audio and everything. And then yeah, you just create channels, which are kind of our equivalent of playlists. And then you could create channels with other people. And yeah, we just launched about a month ago, so we're very early into everything. Yeah.
Nice. How long have you guys been planning it?
I mean, it gets a little bit hazy. It starts somewhere when I was working at Zora. It's like an NFT marketplace.
So many people work at Zora. I was hanging out with, do you know Jay?
Yeah,
Jay's late. I was hanging out with him last night, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I know Jay from Zora.
Yeah.
And it was around that time that like the whole idea of like, oh, like it's really interesting for a platform to like kind of show everything all at once and not just like images like Instagram or like short form text like right. Twitter. And from there, you know, we experimented quite a bit of like NFT curation. And then like we started asking even like more fundamental questions like, does it need to be NFTs? Does it need to be this? Or does it have to be implemented this way?
Mm-hmm.
And then like River is the most like minimal version that we've been able to like distill all of our thinking down. And now that we're at the base level of like, you can post stuff, we're trying to build it back up so that there's more of like tighter like feature loops and social loops where you don't like, you could just be interacting with like two channels with like two group of friends. And that could be like all that you kind of do on River. So yeah, like that's kind of like a broad overview of where we're at right now and like kind of how we got here.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm curious, like kind of like what your like first initial impressions were.
I guess, like point blank when you go on the platform, it kind of reminds me of Arena.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
sure.
Also I guess like mostly the thing that you see first is like the aesthetics of the kind of content that people are posting.
Yeah.
It was very, I don't know how to describe it. I guess just like the homepage when I first went on, it was very like pre-Tumblr.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But I guess it's different every time just based on like what people have been uploading.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you, when you say pre-Tumblr, like what are you thinking
about? I don't know. It's just like the nature of the images. It was like pre-meme, but like these like illustrations that I used to see on the internet in like maybe like MSN era.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So some deep cuts.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah.
But the front page, that's just like the like most recent thing that someone has uploaded. And then what's like the social component to it?
That's like kind of the next thing that we're trying to build. Like the most important thing was for people to create these like context containers, which are the channels.
Yeah.
And then be able to post all types of media files, and then for us to like actually render them on the view page.
Right.
And then right after that, I think we're just kind of like trying to scope out what it, like what is the most high yield social features that we can do that doesn't feel like it's like a brute kind of like conversion of like existing user behavior on like more traditional platforms. Like even if you have 1,000 followers on River, it's not the same 1,000 that it feels like when you have on like Instagram or on Twitter.
How so?
Well, I mean, it's just like a, I think it's like a very simple math thing to me. It's just like the distribution that you get from Instagram or like on any platform kind of dictates like how valuable per follower it is.
Yeah.
So like even if I had like 1 million followers on a very irrelevant platform, it actually doesn't mean anything. It could actually convert to like maybe 800 followers on like a very popping platform.
I think about that a lot, especially in terms of like on TikTok right now, versus a platform like YouTube, follower count versus engagement and like what it that respectively means on each platform. Like you can have a like millions of followers on TikTok, but your videos are only getting like 100,000 views or maybe like 10,000 likes versus on YouTube. I feel like usually people have a lower like subscriber count, but their videos could be popping.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like the algorithm is.
Yeah. Yeah. It. And I guess like that's like kind of like a fundamental lens that we're looking at. Like we can very like we can follow this very well-defined path where we implement like a follower count or like and implement like comments or like DMs in the most like kind of, you know, let's just have it so that people can use it and it feels familiar and get some sort of like social graph started. But it's every platform does that, even to like, you know, like I feel like your banking app will now have DMs.
I know.
And it's just like, I don't need that. Or like I never asked for
Spotify had DMs.
I don't remember that.
What? This is insane.
This was like a really long time ago, but actually Katie was telling me about this. She remembers when Spotify for like a split second had DMs.
Like got a playlist that like you'd go like DM people about their playlist.
I was... No, just like your friends, like the people who you follow, you would just like chat on Spotify.
Wow.
It was quite a while ago though.
Yeah. I mean, I love the experimental attitude of like, what would it happen if like we implemented like DMs on like on said platform, you know, like like introduce some sort of social kind of feature to a non-traditional social app is kind of interesting. But I think we're just at this point where like it feels like we've seen every version of everything in terms of like what an app is supposed to feel like. Like it's like the cynical side of me is just like if it's gonna be if it's mid, that might be the worst thing that you could ever be known for. Like we're like having an app that like functions in a way that is so just like generally that just meets user expectation.
Yeah.
It's just like the easiest path for you to be like completely forgotten. And like, I was going to say 6 months, but I might actually say 6 weeks now.
Yeah.
So
or maybe even like not remembered at all, getting no traction.
Yeah, it's kind of wild how like I feel like all those like feature sets like followers, friends, engagements, post views like create like this weird pressure that like for me personally like prevents me from wanting to post anywhere.
That's so true.
And so like I think stripping all that back and just being like, hey, I just have this fun picture and maybe people saw it. I think some people saw it, but I don't want any more information other than that. You know, it's almost like the sound of hearing your own voice, like we were talking about earlier. Like, I actually don't want to like hear anything else about this, and it's just out there.
That's so true. Yeah. I was talking to someone the other day, and they were like, "I hate stories because I hate seeing who
saw me,
who saw my post, and then like chose not to like it." I was like, "Damn, that's crazy."
Yeah,
they just feel like they're being constantly taunted by these like arbitrary metrics.
Yeah, and I think that's where like we are taking a lot of inspiration from. Like, no one has like explicitly said this yet, but or maybe one person, but like we took a lot of inspiration from e-commerce because like the fundamental logic of e-commerce is that if you like something, add it to a cart, and adding to a cart is like kind of adding something to a playlist or to a channel.
That's true.
But it's just like one kind of thematic bucket, which is I might want to buy this. So, and e-commerce is actually really good for inventory browsing, where it's just like I want to see what clothes that this designer put out, or like I want to see jeans, I want to see tops or whatever. So it is actually the pinnacle of being like having really, really good navigation. And this isn't to say that social media doesn't have navigation, but it's just like the navigation is based on persona. I'm trying to find different people. But what does it look like for a platform that just kind of goes beyond navigation based on like trying to find people? Because that's just like, that's what Facebook had to figure out, or like MySpace had to figure out. It's like, how do we get people online? Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have that problem anymore. It's just like everyone is online. So when everyone's online, like people are more interested in finding things rather than people.
That's so true. And like the inherent social component to a lot of apps does seem limiting in a certain way. It's like there's so many people on Instagram who I don't want to follow, but I feel like I have to because I know them.
Right. Or like I might, like my motivations might not be exactly to follow, but to like maybe save their posts. So there, like there's an entire spectrum in which like I want to take a certain action, but it's not as like as obtuse as like I'll follow you indefinitely until you do some egregious shit and like I need to unfollow you.
Yeah.
So it's like kind of like identifying what are some of the cracks in between the logics that's been like kind of established in the past 10, 15 years, and like can we do something interesting that is like not mid?
Yeah, not mid. So tell me a little bit about your guys's team. There's four, five?
Yeah. So
okay.
I'm one of the four co-founders of LifeWorld. LifeWorld is a company name, and River is the name of the platform. Okay. Sometimes it's confusing, but confusion is nice sometimes. And I mainly design the product and do brand stuff. And then the rest of the team are all full stack engineers. So I'm quite lucky on that regard.
Yeah,
I think it's crazy because like I think we all come from like mad different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Like I recently started coding maybe when we started making River. I come from like 3D art type stuff, and so like whenever you want to put something on like a browser or something, right, like you have to know like a little bit. But like my experience before that was like on the MySpace HTML like editing stuff, you know. So ChatGPT like changed a lot because like it started on some like I just need to get to like the point where I can do XYZ, and then that's how the learning took place.
How long did it take you to learn?
I feel like I'm still learning.
Yeah,
you know?
Of course.
But yeah, I think like what's been interesting is like how like you approach like problems now, where it's just like if you can break down like a large problem into bite-sized pieces,
that's true.
You can make anything pretty much. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, like, it helps having people that know how to code to be like, yo, I'm stuck here. They're like, you need a comma, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did you guys all join forces?
It was very organic. Like, I don't think any of us had really the intention of starting a company, let alone, like, leaving our jobs to start a company.
Right.
But we've been working together on, like, various other projects prior to, like, you know, River and prior to starting LifeWorld. And we all had a lot of similar sentiments just generally about like, there's a lot of fluff that we want to maybe like directly tackle. Like fluff as in like not a bad thing, but just like, what can we do to provide the most like minimal, most distilled experience that we all believe in? And that kind of like shared ethos in trying to present a very opinionated and very simplified experience was like the basis of like, all right, like, what if we actually try to make something out of this?
At what point did you decide to go all in on it?
It was about like a year ago. I was at Zora, was doing a bunch of like research and development, like with the DAO space. And then Zora was kind of like heading into a different direction that kind of like limited that like what I was pursuing at the time. So it was kind of, it was a fork in the road, and I was like, all right, this is like kind of my opportunity to actually like try this out. And then from there on, like, you know, we all kind of like started committing to this idea, and it took like maybe a couple months to get everyone on board and like get incorporated and everything. But it was a very organic and, you know, quick process to get to, you know, a place we were serious enough to be like, all right, this is like a platform that we're making.
Cool. Yeah. What's the ethos of like, so the company's LifeWorld, does the company exist for this product or a product among many things?
In the initial days, I think we spent a lot of time trying to figure out the corporate structure. Mm-hmm. It sounds a little bit like misleading to say corporate structure, because the conversations that we're having weren't just about like what is our like incorporation details. It was more like, do we want to be a creative studio where we build things for other people? Mm-hmm. And then River becomes more of like a tool that other people can use to like do whatever, or like, do we want to, and even within creative studios, there's like an entire range of ways that you can actually go about having a business. So we were like kind of identifying all the pros and cons of different like approaches that we can take. And we kind of landed at like this kind of consensus that like, let's make something for ourselves, because making something for ourselves, as nice as possible, as fast as possible, will actually open our ability to then now pursue different like kind of creative directions outside of just like, oh, we are like a tech startup,
right,
that's working on a platform. Like, yeah. So I think Life World is this incumbent kind of brand that will like slowly start to like flourish as more people use River and like more people are just generally hip to like what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I think, and that's why there was a need to kind of separate the entity that is us for and the product that we're pursuing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the two other guys you guys have on, remind me of their names again.
They're Max and Salif.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. So what were you guys doing before? You said that you were doing 3D art, yeah, or animation,
yeah,
or what?
Yeah, I was, I've had so many like past lives. Like I've done everything from like working at a halfway house to like working at a like subcontractor for a union, then like working at an opera house, like doing graphic design.
Damn, that's cool.
Yeah, that was fun. It was in SF, like Bayview Opera House.
Okay.
Cool spot. Was have like a collective of friends, like Feldzine, which is like all like around like digital art.
Okay, what is Feldzine? I hear about it a lot.
Feldzine is just like an art collective. Like it started like in 2011, Mark Sav and Dev.
Okay.
And it was initially like, it's not funny, I wonder what stories they told, but yeah, initially like it was just like we were doing like photographs of like just clothing and shoes. Like Mark's like a crazy writer, and we were just like trying to get like clothes from like companies, and we just like, hey, we'll do like photo shoots, like shoot us your stuff, and people were sending us samples of clothing, so we like had like cool like unreleased like clothes and stuff. But then it was like around the vaporwave era. Okay. And so like there was like a crazy intersection of like remixing music and like nice like 3D artwork. And then it very quickly led to like exploring that, like I guess like the relationship between like art and music.
Right.
And then that just continued where we would just like drop like zines and issues of like artists that were making just really interesting stuff. And it was initially like us like really looking for these things. And I think like as you look into these things and like have like hyper specific like references to people making whatever, more people find you, and then they reach out and they're like, hey, I do XYZ, and then mm-hmm. you go, yeah, let's chat, like and so it kind of grew like that. Kind of hard to define because like there's also like mad different interests that like we have individually. And so like Dev is really into, you know, like curating IRL events, also like makes crazy art. Mark right now is into like games like a lot. I'm into this right now.
Yeah So it's still going on.
Yeah. I think like there's moments, it's like I like explain things like in metaphors a lot, but it feels like exhales and inhales, you know what I mean? Like inhales where like you really are like hyper focused on like what you're doing like collectively, mm-hmm. and then like exhales where you're just like, oh, like let's go explore and like see these other things and then come back. So it definitely like I like to like involve myself in stuff that like feels like life work, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like that's what everyone's trying to do right now. Right. Everyone's kind of sick of the not to slander anyone, but like working at a B2B SaaS mm-hmm, mm-hmm. 9 to 5.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just particularly central to like, I don't know, probably like New York and maybe SF. Mm-hmm. But people are trying to build something around I don't want to say like their life's work, but yeah, like an actually important problem, mm-hmm, yeah, that they care about. Yeah, yeah. And also something that's kind of like undefined, that has like expandable boundaries and you can do more with, rather, yeah, than like, I don't know. I was talking to my friend about this the other day, where whenever I meet someone who works at like a FANG company, mm-hmm, first I'm like, oh, that's cool. And then I talk to them a little bit more about their specific role, and it's like so ultra specialized, mm-hmm, and specific to like one type, yeah, of thing. Like I do user research for like cloud users, mm-hmm, who are like enterprise class. I'm like, mm-hmm, bro, that sounds boring as hell. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like there isn't a whole lot that you can like do with that, versus when you have like a certain project that, you know, you're building like parts for, mm-hmm, that you can, right, build something bigger.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's like an agency thing where it's, yeah, just like once you start just doing stuff that you just feel so underqualified to do, mm-hmm, and you probably are, like, cause I feel that all the time. You just realize that like, you don't like, there's no such thing as a threshold that you need to meet, like a minimum requirement, you know, like there's minimum requirements for everything in life, like college admissions and all that. So like, you're kind of like really led into that kind of like mental process of like, you need to like clock in X amount of hours with this amount of ability and this amount of like agency to pursue anything. Right. But it's just like, I never knew that as someone who is not a US resident, you can start a company in the US, you know? And like there probably was, yeah, like there's just so many of those like small instances where like you get reaffirmed that like not knowing is never a blocker from you just starting and doing stuff.
Yeah. That's so true. And especially, I don't know, maybe I would have fell into this if I had stayed in Montreal, but I just wasn't there long enough. But mm-hmm, the like being in some kind of central location where you're meeting people who are doing cool things, the way that things like snowball, even just in how you guys met each other and, yeah, like started forming this thing, it's so cool and organic how you meet so many people who are like, you can like crowdsource information, and kind of like develop these hives and these groups or collectives or whatever. And it's organic. It really gives me more faith in, I don't know, that like maybe social media isn't ruining us all.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's always like these little magical moments. Like I think, yeah, my wife, Lily, like she's always like making fun of me, because like I'm basically like everybody I know is like from online. Like,
yeah,
I met her besides like on Twitter. Yeah. You
know, literally.
I mean? And so I'm definitely grateful for like those magical like little moments where you do find like-minded heads like in the midst, mm-hmm, of like.
Recently, 2 days ago, it was just funny. Like me and John were talking about something, and then I was like, "It's actually funny because like I feel like cognitive dissonance is like such a big thing that like people experience, just because like, I don't know, for whatever reason on social media and whatnot, but like there's also a new interesting phenomenon happening, which is the opposite of that, which is like cognitive resonance. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I feel like everything is like everything, like it's, yeah, everything is connected to like something that I've seen or experienced before.
That's so true.
And like, for instance, like I really, really like this subgenre of YouTube of like 4K driving. So I'll be like Utah driving 4K, or like I like kind of like, and it's like 6 hour, like,
yeah, I was about to say, how long are these videos?
It's like 6 hours, or there's this nice drive from like Tokyo to like Mount Fuji, which is like 12 and a half hours or something, or like what, it's a very, very long video, but like I've watched enough small pockets of that video that I've kind of completed the entire video at this point. Mm-hmm. And now I actually, my brain thinks that I've actually done that drive. And I've been to Japan. I've never been to Japan.
Right.
But I think I've been to Japan. And like that experience on top of other experiences that have the loosest kind of connection points all kind of contribute to like me, like just this feeling that like everything I'm exposed to, like the widest surface area of deja vu now. Mm-hmm. Like nothing feels foreign to me. Yeah.
It's very like universal consciousness.
Yeah. And it's like kind of scary to think that you've experienced everything, but at the same time, like to me it's like also very liberating in the sense that like I rarely feel FOMO. Mm-hmm. About like, oh, like my friends are going to Japan, but like what am I doing and not going to Japan? It's just, yeah, like I've been to Japan actually. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, like yeah, it just like helps me to think or express or feel on like another plane, where it's just like experiences are so much more than like, you know, time and space.
Mm-hmm. So how does that tie into the platform in terms of like seeing what other people are posting, the kinds of content that they're posting and how it's like consumed and shared?
There's this thing, I feel like nostalgia is such a huge force in someone feeling connected to something. Like, and nostalgia doesn't have to be something that happened in the past or like, you know, like it could be, I think you could be nostalgic about things regardless of like when it happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like the deja vu thing that I was talking about. I think like nostalgia is such a strong agent of like wanting to connect more things together and create like denser mental maps of like things that you know or things that are interesting to you. Mm-hmm. And it's no longer just like I'm into music. It's like I'm into this specific thing about music that not only applies to music but applies to film or applies to furniture, applies to like, you know, like what, like literally anything. And right now, you know, with like the vertical scroll TikTok feeds and the Instagram feeds, like a lot of social media users are more or less confined to a passive consumption where, you know, the content never ends and mm-hmm. it serves to entertain you. But what does it look like for a platform that actually encourages you to be more actively participating and put in, like actually put things into different boxes and containers and then find more like-minded people in the process of doing something active. And I guess like from like a more simplified version of all of that is just like, I love the agency of people, you know, starting like Instagram brands or like starting a new podcast with their friends. And it's just like, what does it look like for a platform to kind of like specifically help people to kind of like expand outside of consumption and become more of a producer of things,
right? Yeah. A contributor.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I guess I gotta describe it just from my point of view of like some like how I want to use it or like how I use River is like, I think it like initially there was like a frustration in like how when I would make like a picture or like I would have like a lot of ton of references. Yeah. I'm like this idea of like once you make something, like it doesn't even matter like what your intention was because like people are going to receive it however.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I also love the idea of like footnotes, and I love like reading books, like just random stuff that has like maybe like a quarter of the pages just footnotes.
Yeah, yeah.
And so like I was like, oh yeah, like, you know, in this piece, like I have all these other references, like I'm actually going to tell you all about these. But there was like no clean way other than just like, man, maybe I just make some reference, like I'll actually add footnotes to whatever I'm making. But like a cleaner way could be like, oh, like here's the picture. Let me actually like put this PDF of this book or like, or just like an article or like a song or like a video, completely like unrelated things or right. maybe related, right? That all like open up like individual rabbit holes.
Yeah, yeah.
That like both add context to the piece, but like decontextualize it to like allow like heads to form like their own contextualizations of like everything that's happening, like mm-hmm. in a given picture, for example, which feels mad interesting to me, right? Mm-hmm. Just the way people like consume pictures or like any kind of media, really.
Yeah.
There's also like, I don't know, like another example could be like, I don't know if you ever like look up like mixes on YouTube. Right. And sometimes like they'll drop a whole mix, but they'll never like do the track IDs.
Yeah. Yeah.
But sometimes people will be adding the track IDs.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the comments.
Yeah. 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 Or sometimes like there was this one, I forget which mix it was, but it was like a dance mix from like the 90s or something. And I was like asking for like some sample IDs and the dude was like not trying to give them to me.
Really?
He's gatekeeping. He's like, open up your ears. I'm like, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So how'd you get them? You didn't?
I didn't. Some other head, I tend to like go back to videos and somebody like added a couple and I was like, yo, update the, I don't know what you call them, like the timestamps.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like update the timestamps. Like, I don't know if I actually haven't followed up mm-hmm. to see if they updated the timestamps or not.
It drives me nuts. I mean, do you guys know Zane Kind?
Yeah.
I listen
yeah.
to the podcast.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was talking to him about kind of the same thing about like references and gatekeeping. And gatekeeping culture. I think that he notices it a lot around fashion, but it seems like on the internet, for the most part, things are pretty democratized. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. That's something that I think about a lot. And especially when it comes to like collections and yeah. channels, which relates to your guys's platform, like It reminds me of my first experience with it was like Tumblr tags. Mm-hmm. When you would like click on a tag, or I would like search people's Tumblrs all the time and do like /search/ look through their tags. Mm-hmm. And it was this like undefined, you could put whatever kind of content you wanted, but like it was streamed into one channel for them through their perspective.
Yeah.
And I always like those kinds of collections like that. I don't know. It seems like a lot of social media is geared around collecting things. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking like Pinterest, Arena, Tumblr, not so much like Instagram.
Well, I mean, now with the saved stuff, like like you can save stuff.
Oh, yeah. I don't utilize that feature.
Oh, really?
You're a big saver?
Yeah, yeah. Like even more so recently.
Okay.
Just like people to hit up or like, you know, just like whatever. Like, so yeah, but I do feel like, sorry, I lost my train of thought. There was like one thing that I wanted to say, which was that like there's, I think the internet kind of like behaves in a completely different physics than like in reality. Like even the fashion thing that you just brought up, I think the reason why certain things were gatekept was because, you know, like let's say a collection from the 90s, like the only way they could distribute it is with like booklets or like books or whatever. And then they were not mass producing those things. Mm-hmm. So naturally it was a physical limitation that it, like the information of said show, it wasn't going to reach all corners of the world. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas on the internet, you know, distribution is not an issue. You can send it very directly to people regardless of physical location, and you don't need to have like, it's not like a physical location where there's a finite amount of space that you can contain X amount of information. That's seemingly ever expanding. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I feel like kind of playing into those dynamics is pretty much what all of the social media have been doing. And I guess like a small ethos that we have is like, we're not necessarily a revolution. Like River isn't like a revolutionary product. It will feel familiar in a lot of ways, but the way that we're trying to be different is just like trying to combine 3% of everything that's like existed prior to us. So like, we might want to take 3% of like the thing that made Instagram stories really special,
mm-hmm.
or 3% of hashtags, and then like kind of like refitting them into a way that it makes sense and it doesn't feel like a very brute translation of like, all right, we're just going to implement hashtags and it's just like it'll be exactly like Instagram.
Yeah.
And you know, I feel like that's where Threads kind of fail to land a cultural moment.
They didn't do anything different?
Well, no, it was just like, it works so well that the eventual question is, so why wouldn't I just use Twitter?
Yeah, like it wasn't really broken.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think there's like an art in subtlety and like the impact of accumulating all these subtle kind of things eventually becoming like feeling like this very unique place to be. And I think, you know, that's probably why Tumblr felt really interesting. Like, what does it look like to add the dynamics of blogs that made being on the internet in the 90s really interesting for the 2010s.
Mm-hmm.
So similarly, like, yeah, it's just a lot of researching what made certain small pockets of the internet and certain small features within those pockets interesting, and then seeing how we can apply them to River in a way that makes sense for 2024.
Right.
Yeah.
What kinds of research are you guys doing? Like concrete things that people have reported that worked for them? Or is it more like social research, like stuff that you guys find cool or what worked for you, people that you know?
I don't know if I'm answering your question directly. Actually, I might not be at all.
That's okay.
But like, I feel like I've noticed like an observation bias is just like, because we're working on this, definitely have seen like other heads kind of like working on something very similar. And also, I think that there's probably like a desire for like maybe like moving away from like traditional like social media and like kind of like going back and like, you know, like talking about Tumblr, talking like about Arena and all these things, and like going back to maybe like simpler things that have a lot of like consequence.
Like, I guess like we spent a lot of time like also like obsessing over like list view.
Yeah.
Cause like my experience of like getting my first iPod and putting songs onto iTunes, and then seeing it in a list.
I was talking about this the other day.
Yeah.
And I was expressing my frustration with Spotify because, like, I was an iPod Classic user until 2020.
Oh, wow.
Like, I didn't have Spotify. I didn't really use my iPhone. I was just, like, rocking with SoulSeek. And then I felt like all my music was so accessible to me because it was in the list view and I would just scroll through all of the music that I had instead of, I don't know, when I was talking about this to someone, they were like, you can do that in Spotify. I was like, I know, but I just don't. I'm not like utilizing it in the right way.
Yeah. And I guess like the thing that I've noticed from like a design perspective is that like sometimes like the list, like you can still have the same list view, but it's also the density of like how, you know, how spread apart, you know, everything is or like, yeah, just like the density of information is a huge kind of shift in how people perceived the collection of information.
That's so true.
And the hard part is like really nailing it down through multiple iterations and feedback of like, so how dense do people actually want certain experiences to be? Because I'm a believer that like, you know, list view should be quite dense so that you can get a very global view of what's happening. But to address the specific need of like, I want to have like a little bit of a taste of each thing, then grid view works better. And then for grid view, how big do those thumbnails need to be?
Right.
How many per row and how many columns, you know, everything. And that's like, that's simultaneously the very tedious part of designing,
right,
but also the magic of it, because when you actually compare different interfaces, they're the broad strokes is they're both doing the same thing. Like both views, I mean, both interfaces have a grid and a list view, but why does one work better than the other?
What did you guys find?
I mean, we're still in the process of finding like patterns and everything, but you know, and this is where like e-com was like extremely helpful, because they need to like, if you go on Essence, like there's hundreds of pages, you know? So how do they organize their pages? Like they have four per row, and how tall are their like, you know, preview cards,
right?
And like general proportions of, you know, the space, like those things I think are just going to be never ending, because we're just gonna get even more feedback. There's gonna be more obscure references that we can kind of take, you know, again, that 3% and try to distill it. So yeah, it took a long time for us to get to the design that you see today, but like can confidently say it kind of represents all the previous versions in a way that like kind of spiritually encompasses everything.
My thought got cut off because I started like thinking back on like the K-pop episode
when
the guest was like talking about like these like niche like K-pop apps.
Yes, yeah. Right?
And so like it feels like we've reached this like Cambrian explosion of like very hyper specific like applications. Like everybody's got an app, like Instagram made a Threads, you know, like for Twitter. And it's like, why do we need all these things? And I think that it's just because, or I don't think it's just because, but I think one of the things that's happening is that like, I have like this thing where like, even when people use Google, like I feel like they're not like, or Google search, they're not like actively trying to find answers like that challenge their beliefs. It's almost like a mirror. It's just like, yes, I believe that's this, so I'm finding this. And so I think that like with applications, it's probably something like that, where they're like going to find something that like they already like, they're already used to. I like list view, so I'm gonna use things with list view, whatever, grid view, etc. And so like, yes, we make opinionated things at the river level, but like I think what's exciting about like like what gets me hype about river is that there's like a protocol underneath. And so like I can like, if for example Joey's like decides to like censor all these crazy things that might be like no more like 4K driving videos or whatever, right? I can like take all that information and like expose it and then be like, you know what? I hate Joey. I want rounded corners.
Yeah.
I want grid view, but rounded corners. And I want like only the color blue. Like you can like take all that information and like expose it somewhere else.
Okay.
And so I think in relation to that, it's like all this data to that like allows like heads to build like custom things on top of it and personalize it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know that that was a function of...
Well, like River is like open source.
Right,
like,
right.
It's all completely open. And so like, I think that's one of the benefits of like the way we're like even, not to get into like the crazy like protocol things, but like that's one of the interesting things about the protocol too, is just how like you can take things at the channel level and like make your own site out of it, mm-hmm. or like whatever. Like it doesn't have to stay with River.
Yeah,
it's like the Tumblr thing where you had the core interface that you were discovering and liking and reposting,
yeah,
and then there was your blog,
the where HTML.
Exactly. And you put custom logos on it, you put your BGM on it,
yeah.
Like that was the presentation that you were like, that was the link that you were sending to people. So I think with just like AI tools kind of like going crazy right now, like the distance between someone who has that desire but doesn't know how to code at this moment to being able to spin up something and fulfill that desire is ever so getting closer.
Yeah.
And yeah, we're really interested in just like exposing content that can live outside of the platform. And yeah, it's just like Frank Ocean's Tumblr was like a huge inspiration. Like
FrankOcean.tumblr.com.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just so crazy. After we chose a name and stuff, I was like, oh, let me go on Frank Ocean's Tumblr. And then to go to like a previous page, like he customized it.
Okay.
So it says like the back button is actually called River.
Okay.
And the front, like to go to the next page or something, it's Lake. So okay. There was a little bit of like a whoa, like obviously we're not necessarily like doing the same thing in terms of like whatever, but just to see kind of, it's the cognitive resonance thing. It's just like I can now see it from my perspective, and even though those things are different, it feels like a cool reference that I can kind of keep, and then I can share with other people.
It's all connected.
Yeah,
that is cool. I do think a lot about like opportunity to like catering to the masses, or like being user friendly in a way that people can figure things out and use something easily, and then giving people the opportunity to go as in depth with it as they want, because I feel like you kind of have to balance those two things. If you're launching something that requires a lot of learning, or like someone has to really want to use it super badly in order to endure that learning curve, then you're probably going to have a steep drop off of users. Yeah. Right. But then you, like Tumblr is a great example where they had that affordance of like, it was super easy to use, really intuitive. Everyone was on it. But then the people who were really, really on it, they were doing shit like customizing their own HTML and CSS. Yeah. And they were getting more creative with it. So like, it's just, it like opens up the paths or like the flows, and allows you to be more creative.
I feel like that's the kind of gatekeeping I like, not to like, it's like with the line between gatekeeping and hazing, like hazing your users to be like, nah, if you really want it, you'll figure it out.
Yeah.
But like, I do think that there's something in that, like this is a niche thing. And so like that already, I think like by consequence of choice, like you've already kind of like defined the line of like users that may be interested or not like in using certain things, right? If you don't like writing, like you're not gonna want to use Twitter. Mm-hmm. If you don't like writing and reading, you might not be on Twitter. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
that's true.
And so like those are interesting lines to like explore. Think about.
Like especially on a design level, because like I think personal style is so interesting when you consider from the perspective that like if there isn't like Instagram or like kind of like mood boards and stuff, you have to kind of put in the work to go through like page 17 to find something that fits your price range, to fit your kind of just style spectrum and everything. So that's where like kind of through the constraint of like something is not being fed to me, that like you are able to kind of make those decisions about how you want to appear. So it's a fine line where like we're like the interface or the people participating on it are not necessarily gatekeeping it, but they're not also, it's not like a feed, algorithmic feed, where it's just like, because you've liked all these songs, we're going to recommend you like 10,000 more of these ones. that's just the easiest way for you to never actually make it past where you're currently at.
Yeah. How do you guys feel about like the curiosity of users, especially in the modern era, where like I feel like my curiosity has kind of been stunted, and when I'm faced with a new application or like program, product, whatever, with a steep learning curve, it sucks, because like even if it's like my friends who are doing it, I use it for a little bit, and like I guess it's all about like adoption, the adoption problem, but it's like so hard for me to learn a new program and kind of stick with it.
Right, but maybe that's
just a personal gripe.
No. I think that's like, that's just such a common thing where it's just like, I don't know what to be curious about, and I don't know where to be curious. But I think, like, even like how we're talking right now, I think the best way, the best motivation is to, so like, it's like, if you want to find friends, the best way to do it is via your existing friends.
So true.
So similarly, I think the one really core part of the social aspect that we're trying to create is that, like, accounts with millions of followers, subreddits with, you know, tens of thousands of people, they're too open. It feels like how am I supposed to choose one subreddit over another and like figure out where to put my time and effort and like to feel like a part of the community? So inversely, the constraint of having small closed communities are actually really nice to kind of get you feeling like there is a much smaller world in which like your contribution or your participation feels more direct and intimate. Mm-hmm. So like one thing that we're trying to do is like just invite systems to channels. So like based on whatever we talked about today, and I thought there was like an interesting channel that I would like you to like participate, I'll just invite it to you. You can just like literally redeem that like code and then start posting and stuff. And then you'd just be interacting at the channel level, not on the river level. Like, if you get to the river level, great. But like, all I could ever wish someone to do is like, there's this one screenshot channel that I like dump some crazy shit. Mm-hmm. And that's like, that's all I ever do with this platform. And I think that is more than fine.
That's so cool. Cause I was going to ask how you guys designed for the niche versus everyone. But yeah, like on the subject of Reddit, I'm only active in like one Reddit, and it's like a closed private subreddit for a very specific demographic of people.
I'm so curious what this subreddit is now.
Do you guys know the podcast Red Scare?
No.
Okay.
Is that horror stories?
No, it's like two downtown, like downtown New York girls who are kind of like big on Twitter. They're kind of like reactionary, like used to be left wing, but now we're kind of leaning right. Anyway, but the subreddit isn't even for that podcast. It's for the, it's called Red Scare for Girls and Gays. And like no one on the subreddit even listens to the podcast anymore. It's just like, it's a very, it's a unique like subgenre of person.
Yeah. It's like a mutation.
Yes.
Of a community that feels uniquely attached to something that started it, but like now has evolved into a larger kind of like, I don't know. It's like hard to define that pathway, but I'm seeing that so much more.
Yeah, totally.
Like on the subject of podcasts, like emergency intercom.
Okay. Yeah.
It's just like so funny to me. Cause like my girlfriend watches it and I'm like, oh, I'm like starting to watch it now, like find it interesting.
Yeah.
And like, she doesn't really listen to podcasts, but at this point, I don't think it's even a podcast to her. Yeah. Like she's just consuming it because these are two people that she finds interesting.
Right. Right.
And then when someone she knows also who listens to emergency podcasts, like they talk about it together, like, oh, like whatever. I don't even think they're talking about the podcast. Like it kind of like goes beyond the container of, in which like they kind of communicate to their audience. And I think that's really exciting because like it just kind of shows you that like you don't, like no one is like bound to any specific boxes. Like I don't have to be a podcaster in the same way. I don't have to be like a designer. You can kind of be a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah, like channels are like a really interesting way. And channels like not even specific to us, but just like any type of like group formation is like an interesting way for you to like really explode your identity outside of like, you know, like a very identity based platform, like an Instagram where like you're going to your profile and like your posts are specifically things that you've created.
Yeah.
So.
Right. There's like a clear difference between like broadcasting and then also like a petri dish of like where it's like, yep, we started with this like, I don't know, like, you ever see like when people do like the swabs, like swabbing?
The allergen
like,
test?
Yes,
well, yeah. Well, not allergen test, like swab like at your skin or something and they'll put it in a petri dish and then it like it's like now a crazy
culture. It's a culture, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To see how much bacteria grows. Right. Like, how dirty
and so like
it
I
is.
Think of like what you were just describing or even channels is something like, hey, let's just dab this channel with a little swab and see the culture that like emerges from it. Yeah.
That's so true. That's a great analogy.
Yeah.
It reminds me of like you guys it seems like you're giving the affordance of being more creative on a platform, like beyond what it was intended for. I can't think of any good examples of this, but like, there's just certain cases where, I don't know if Ruby was in here, I'm sure he would have a million.
I actually have a great example of this. So Kevin Abstract in 2013 goes on the Kanye West forum. And it's like, who wants to start a band? Yeah. That's all it took. And the blog was only a carrier of that message.
Kanye too, though.
I mean, yeah. So like, it's just like those moments are, I think those are the really, really special kind of places that people kind of like congregate around. And I think Tumblr was that, you know, MySpace was that, SoundCloud was that. So how do we kind of, again, like, what is that version? What does River need to do so that it can create that moment for someone who's like looking for a place to connect with other people? And that kind of just like will downstream all the design decisions that we need to take and what type of social features that, you know, and like uniquely enable that type of like user, you know, user motivation or like logic.
Right. Yeah. It gives me a lot of like faith in the user experience or the user journey that people are still curious enough to like so adamantly subvert or like take over a platform for their own and use it for their own thing and kind of like manipulate its boundaries and like what it can do in a way that we don't. I feel like we don't see it anymore because the developers are trying to think of everything for us. They're trying to like really curate or kind of like dictate your experience and what you're supposed to do on a certain platform and how you're supposed to use it.
Yeah. I feel like that's so boring. Like I feel like even with like the front page of River, one of the first things we talked about is like, oh, like let's invite very specific kind of heads. So like the content is cool and stuff. And I was like, I actually love the chaos. I want heads like using this like as Instagram and everything, like just so it becomes like this really like weird, like chaotic front page that maybe has like no relationship between things.
Right.
Only because like I feel like it forces heads that like are like, I hate the front page. Like, let me make a channel, right? Like it forces like the emergence of in and out groups right away. And so like you can have like whatever, like the front page might be like a for you type of like place to be where you can see kind of like maybe this more like, I don't want to say mainstream, but like
preference based.
Yeah. Where it's just kind of like this preference based thing, and then you can like go into like deeper like niches, right? But I think like people don't always want to be hanging out in like the deepest of niche. Like we can all laugh like at a meme on Twitter, right? And so like people like traversing like the niches to then come up for air in the mainstream side and then go back down.
It reminds me of something of the old internet, having your homepage just be like the most recently added content on your platform. And then things got really curated.
Yeah.
And then the homepage turned into like the people who work at the company, what they think that you should see.
Yeah.
I don't know. Clearly you guys think that the dump is better.
I feel like we might have different opinions on it.
I mean, I've grown to really appreciate how different the homepage feels, and I've grown to also feel less a type of way about like, oh, what if like someone I really like admire checks out River because I told them to, and then they just see like shit posts.
Yeah.
The entire homepage, and like this is not for me.
That is true, because I mean, just like I was saying to you guys earlier, the first time I went on, I was like, I was trying to get a vibe check of like what's going on. But then all that kind of takes is you go on it one more time and you're like, okay, it's like truly just different content. I think it was just one person who was uploading mad shit.
Yeah.
I was like, exactly. Okay, is this the vibe of this site?
Exactly. And I think that is like the true kind of in my mind, like when platforms talk about like censorship and stuff, the big thing for me is that like censorship is bad because it just limits the diversity of things that you can experience. And River at this moment feels like truly the Wild West in terms of just like I'm getting like very like 2012 Instagram Instagram filter kind of post. I'm getting VSCO vibes a little bit. I'm getting a little bit of like Strava vibes a little bit here and there. And that diversity is just like hard found when, you know, in that like vertical scroll, everything is adjusted or constantly adjusting to your evolving preference. Mm-hmm. It's just like, yeah, it's like it feels like constraints are always just really, really necessary for you to then kind of feel more agency to do whatever you want with it.
Yeah, that's true. And like, I wish that I felt creative enough where when I got on a new platform, I didn't immediately try to like decode what other people are posting and how they're interacting. And then I'm kind of like mimetic. I love people who like go on Arena and really like create their own process, or they use it for their own purposes, and they get creative with like the boundaries and constraints of what you can do with it. Versus I feel like now I'm so used to things being spoon fed to me and like how I'm supposed to use a certain platform or a certain app that like initially when I get on a new one, I'm just trying to figure out where the spoon is.
Exactly. What do I need to do to feel like I can like put it into like a convenient mental model of this is that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And in that sense, I think Arena is like really, a trailblazer where like it really depends how you use it and the people that you see using it that's going to define the impression and the brand that you have of Arena. And yeah, more and more platforms I think are just like the emergent platforms, not only us but for everyone, it's going to feel closer to that. It's just, you know, your relationship to like, I feel like if you grew up in a specific era of Instagram, you have a very specific relationship to it.
That's true.
And if you like, you know, and but I think, yeah, like it'd just be so interesting that like the impression people have of River isn't going to be bound to like 2012 to 2015 buckets. It's going to be bound to like how many times do you use it, how many refreshes do you do it, so that you actually, your spectrum of what you've experienced based on like a chronological feed is wider than someone else's, or like some people might only contribute to like two channels that their friends start, and they might not have any kind of desire or general like awareness of how the platform as a whole feels. And that I think is just super, super interesting that like everyone has a very different impression of a thing, and a brand doesn't need to have this like guideline of like how everyone should feel about it.
This crazy because like even on the front page, like one thing I think about a lot is like this type of like context leak that happens, I think, like on all platforms, but it feels like especially like salient, or like it could be salient on like River, where it's just like what happens if you're like somebody drops like the mad personal note, like super serious, and like right next to it it's like the most clown picture of like I don't know, some head doing whatever. And like what does that mean, right? Like does that make us like more I guess like numb to like these crazy like emotional roller coasters?
I think so. I've thought about this before, or maybe I heard someone talk about it specifically with TikTok, where like the speed at which your emotions are, you're like crying and then you're laughing and then you're like watching a really serious lecture, and it's just this like constant like schizophrenic whiplash of like the kinds of content that you're consuming. I don't know. Do you guys think that that's a good thing?
I don't know.
I don't think it's a unique thing. I think if you live in a city like New York, that's kind of like the experience you have anyways, you know? There's so much, everyone is operating at different depths that like, you know, I think that's like, that's a quality that people really come to appreciate. It's just like, everyone is here, you know? So it's not inherently a good or bad thing. And I think it exists in not only just like modern social media, but across like, you know, different planes.
I guess it's kind of just like a factor of life. Like I'll be listening to hyperpop in my headphones, and then I walk past like a guy who's like dying on the street. I'm like beep 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 beep.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy like what these new things, like what new behaviors like emerge. Like I was thinking, I was like, yo, like I already feel kind of crazy. Like if I put a Vision Pro on and like really get used to it, like am I gonna be hallucinating in real life? Like I have my sister, like one thing that she does is like if she'll see me on the laptop and she wants to like point at something, she'll like click on the screen. She's like 15. I've seen her like click on the screen and she's like, oh, it's not touchscreen. It's like, that's like a consequence of just being like always like on her phone, you know? So am I going to just be like doing like random hand motions in the air, like after Vision Pro, or am I just going to like,
I always, every time I'm looking for something around my house, I have the innate impulse to do Control F.
Control F. Yeah. Like I really need my keys to appear right now. Facts. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
This is kind of like cross, like you're getting your wires crossed. Yeah. You're like, oh, wait, no, it's not my computer.
Yeah, yeah.
Context leak.
But yeah. I am on my computer like literally all the time. So it makes sense that it has definitely bled into. Well, sometimes I think about this a lot. Do you guys ever dream that you're on your phones?
Or like I have a few times. Yeah. A few times. Yeah.
Sometimes my dream is just my phone. Like I'm just like, I'm not looking at my phone. It just like is my phone screen.
Yeah.
That's actually kind of tight. Wait, is it like a finger like scrolling through?
Or no, it's just like the screen in my brain. Like there's, we are one.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like, again, like I'm really fascinated with this idea that like we, like deja vu is going to be such a complicated notion moving mm-hmm. forward.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, I feel like I've experienced this. And like, mm-hmm. even like the early days of VR, you know, people with a fear of heights, they mm-hmm. would experience like the most animated version of like heights, but yeah, they would yeah. like their body would get tricked very right. easily. So, you know, cognitively, I think we know better that this is just VR, but our body feels that, you know, this is a true live experience. Mm-hmm. So similarly, like once we start to kind of really augment our kind, like, or blur the distance between like what it is to live in the physical world and the digital world, which I think there is already such a blurred distance between them.
Yeah. Right.
My sense of, you know, like, yeah, that gap is just decreasing ever so finely, very, very quickly that, yeah, it's just going to feel like, I'm just going to be like, I've done this before. And it's just like the craziest, like fantastical thing yeah. possible.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we're seeing in a real way, we're seeing real effects of these boundaries being eroded right now. That's probably why like everyone has ADHD right now. Which I like don't think is a real thing, even though I like probably have it. Actually, like I do have it. I'm technically diagnosed, but it's not real. It's just because I'm on my computer all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. What websites do you go most often? Like, what's your like top three or top five?
I love this question. I always ask people this. Yeah. I love knowing people's like digital routines.
Yes.
I'm not very unique or creative. Like when I open my computer, I go to Twitter immediately. Mm-hmm. I open my email. Instagram is more of a phone thing, but I'm doing Lent right now. So I'm trying to do less than 2 hours on my phone every day.
Okay, wow.
Email, I usually open my one subreddit. Yeah. let's see, what are my top sites?
Wait, real quick, does 2 hours on the phone also like translate to 2 hours on the computer?
No, so okay. That's the thing. It's like, I'm trying to get my They're screen different. Time down, but yeah. I just go on my computer yeah, for everything. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, I go on Discord.
I've had those thoughts where like I'll put my phone down and then I'll open up my computer and then I'll close my computer and I'll watch TV and yeah. I'm like, dude, my screen time like it has to be like, I don't know.
There's so many times when I'm scrolling Twitter on my phone and I have Twitter open on my computer and I'm mm-hmm. like, bro, this is the dark zone right now.
Vertical monitor and horizontal one. Yeah. Advanced.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about you guys? What are your digital routines?
I'll hit like the soccer page on Reddit, watch a couple highlights, yeah. maybe hit yeah. the comments.
Okay.
Actually, like mine, okay, it's not directly answering your question, but I've started to really use picture in picture.
What's that?
So it's oh. like, it's like, so, okay, it's like, this is like a thing I think that started on Androids. So it's more of a mobile experience. And then it kind of like got retrofitted to like the desktop experience. I might be completely wrong, but it's essentially like, let's say, I have YouTube Premium, so if I exit out the app, the player is still there, but I could use the rest of my phone.
Okay.
So there's like a small window on the top of my phone screen that continues playing the video, and then I'm just doing other shit. So on the computer now, it's just like, I want to watch a video. I just like right click and do picture in picture, and then like I can resize the window to however big or small I want. And then I could put it anywhere in the computer, like on the desktop. And then like do other things. So it's just like, it's kind of like the thing that you were saying, like have Twitter open on your phone or like, and do something else.
Right.
But like, yeah, I'm just like, I've just started to do that so much more recently. And there's this like new YouTube hotkey that I found. So if you like long press space, it just automatically double times.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just like, there's a lull, hit the space bar and like, advance like 10 seconds in the span of like 5.
Interesting.
And then I'm just like, my consumption of things is growing even faster.
Do you think you're gonna like make the, now that you've crossed that threshold of picture in picture, like multiple small windows, like 5 videos at a time?
I mean, that's the Vision Pro thing that they're
selling. That's what I was gonna say. That's what they're trying to do. You have like spatial windows.
Right. Yeah. Right.
You have YouTube over here and then Twitter over here.
Because it was so crazy to me when I was growing up, and like I go to like a rich friend's like house, they got a TV every room, and I'm like, why could you just watch it in the living room? Do you really need to have a TV every single room? And I'm just like, that is exactly what's happening.
I'm having a TV in every room. TV in the bedroom has always been like kind of sacrilegious to me.
I've always wanted to do that, like no TV in the bedroom, like no electronics, but nah, I've never done it.
We don't have a TV here, actually.
Oh yeah.
So we used to have one here, and the sad thing is that like I love watching movies.
Yeah.
But I work all day, so I'm always playing movies on my second screen, and then I'm like in Figma on my other one.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm kind of doing the spatial screening.
Anyways. Yeah. Exactly.
But do you not find it shoots your attention?
Honestly, in a weird way, it's like kind of like rain sounds to me.
Okay.
Now I'm like, like left and right brain is like a concept of the past generation. I have like 8 brains now. Like I have quadrant brains. Yeah. I have like a southwest brain like a northeast brain, and like they're all tapping into different parts of it. So,
and they're all running at different speeds.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just super fried. Like if I'm like reading, like if I'm doing something, especially like when I'm trying to like zone in, if I'm gonna listen to music, like it can't have words.
Yeah,
like it can't have anything. Mm-hmm. I've like never been able to do the like the audiobooks, because I'm just like literally like it becomes like mush, and I'm just like I can't ever like extract information from it. So like I feel like I have to do like one thing at a time, or like minimal distractions. I think I might just be fried. I don't know.
I think I'm kind of that way too. Like the movies that I watch while I'm working, like I'm not consuming them. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's a good one if I'm like taken away from my work and I'm focusing all my attention on it. I'm like, this shit's great.
Are you watching movies that you've watched before?
I do that a lot.
Yeah.
Like I was saying to someone last night how like my running list of international films is just like growing longer and longer, because I rarely have an hour or like 2 or 3 hours to just sit and like read subtitles.
Yeah.
I do love a rewatch.
Rewatch is great, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just comforting more than anything.
It is.
Because it's just like, I know exactly what to expect. And yeah.
Do you like predict the next words? Like, are you like...
No, not even like that. But it's just like, it's just like a comfort thing. Yeah. I think, as you said earlier, it's like new experiences are just like, it's just... It's quite hard to like kind of bring yourself to constantly expose yourself to things that you have no prior reference points for.
Yeah.
And I think it's like, that's like just a direct cause of social media in the past 10, 15 years, continuously going from we're going to connect you to people to we're going to provide you entertainment. Mm-hmm. Like social media today, I don't think shares almost any of the same kind of like North Star missions as it did, 15 years ago. It's just like, what do you do when you're on the train and you have nothing to do? Like go on social media, not to connect with people, but to entertain yourself.
That is so true. Yeah. And like the new content that you are experiencing, you can only receive it through these, like not habitual, but like these familiar patterns and channels that like arrive packaged to you in a way that is perfectly digestible and has been explicitly designed and created for your easy digestion.
So
yeah, I feel like what's been crazy about that too is that like most of the stuff that's always presented is just new. Like I feel like there's a lack of like going back and seeing like the material that has existed like in the past. At least for me, like when I'm on Spotify, there's nothing, like it's always hottest new release, like all these things, right? And it, like I have to be very conscious of like, I want to actually go and like, actually I'm not using Spotify to like discover music. I like go to YouTube. Now like it's crazy because now even YouTube, at least for me, like I'll search like if I search whatever album, it'll give me like albums from that era, but they aren't like novel. Like, they aren't like products of artists from that era, there'll be like amalgamations of like 1970s type music. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
1970s type jazz, which might be a mix with no track IDs.
I love albums on YouTube that have like somehow been fed into the algorithm that they mm-hmm. seem like a purely YouTube like hit yeah. record, where they have like a good example is that it's called like Plantasia. You guys know what I'm talking about? Yeah. It has like millions of views on YouTube, but like, is it even on Spotify? It probably is now.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I feel like that record got popular because it like was fed into the YouTube algorithm. Yeah. People started listening to
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
There was a while where I was looking at like Doomer Jazz. I don't know if you've ever seen those videos.
Yeah, actually there's a, I don't know if you've seen this. I think there's another conceptual development of that genre. Cause like, maybe not development is the right word, but there's like Brazilian Doomer music for an hour. And it's just like literally like Bossa Nova, but like they just like put like a new kind of like context to it.
Yeah.
And now there's like these like, 8 hours like music Bruce Wayne listens to in his cave for the next 8 hours. And it's just like, you're like, you're just like, I am Bruce Wayne. I am in his cave and I'm getting ready for this fight.
It's kind of like the next level up from playlist culture, which was like curating a vibe. And now it's like a very specific activity that it's being centered around. But how do you guys feel about the Spotify algorithm?
I think there was like a change that I experienced recently where when I go to like an artist radio or like a song radio, instead of showing me recommendations based on the song itself, it's like a combination between the songs, that style of the song, and also songs that I've already listened to.
I've noticed that too, yeah.
So I'm actually like the recommendation isn't going as far as it used to.
Yeah.
It's kind of held back to things that it knows that are in close proximity that I've already listened to. And that is like oddly weird, where it's just like, no, you're supposed to show me like things I've not experienced before, but like you're feeding me things that it's the rewatch thing, you know?
Yeah. No, totally. It's like confirmation bias. It's, you were mentioning this earlier. It's like when people are Googling something, they're looking for something that they already know.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And I guess they figured out. So actually I was just writing a piece about this the other day, and there's this statistic. It was only done in, England, but British men, that's the group that they polled, after the age of 30, they like basically stop listening to new music. They stick to what they know.
Yeah.
They stick to what they liked when they were like in their teens and early 20s, and then they just listen to that forever.
Right.
And I wonder if that's because they're like no longer being marketed to, or if they're no longer being marketed to because they already have that habit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's more interesting.
Yeah, I feel like it's also like a, just like an age thing, where, you know, listening to like a certain piece of music or a genre for the first time when you're 16 is way different than when you're listening to it when you're like maybe even 30 or like 50 or something.
Yes, yeah, so
and
true.
Therefore, like your just like willingness to kind of explore outside of things that you already know you really enjoy and find like a big fulfillment is just, you know, constantly like, you know, trending lower. So yeah, like it doesn't even feel like a phenomenon specific to like digital consumption habits. It's just generally what people do.
Yeah, I was like, when y'all were talking about rewatching things, I was like wondering, I was like, well, I wonder how much of that is just like an artifact of getting older. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just
like,
oh, I found my movies. Like, is it just the music, or is it movies? Is it shows? Is it like...
It's also with like friends too. It's just like you stick to the friends that you've like, you know, you feel comfortable with and everything.
Yeah, the music thing is mad interesting, just because like if it's heads that are like 30 plus, like what we're talking about the 90s, like not like much internet around. So like probably like the discovery of new music was around places.
That's true.
It's like experiences.
Yeah.
And so maybe they're having less experiences, which is like related to like curiosity or like, I mean, openness to like new experiences or something. Yeah.
I've been doing this thing recently where like if I'm ever in a car for an extended period of time, rather than going to my like songs, I just be like, pick a word. And it's just like, all right, it'll be like mango. And I search mango and then go like hit the songs tab and just like let it play.
How often are they good?
Never. But like that never is so much more interesting than being like, this song's, I like this song, you know? Yeah. So, and then like I found some songs through that experience. It's the whole like kind of like Shazam thing too. It's just like I didn't choose the song to be this, let alone play, but like in happenstance, like I happen to find it interesting and I want to know what it is. Mm-hmm. So like those opportunities are not as common, or it's less and less common, just because we're so used to being like, I want to listen to this song right now, and you can do that.
Yeah.
So introducing a little bit more of like variability very consciously has been kind of an interesting way of keeping things still feeling fresh and not stagnant too much.
Bringing it back to the algorithm is like kind of crazy, because like I wonder how many people like jumping into cold water, like maybe like not a lot. So like the algorithm has to be like nice and lukewarm, where it's just like, dude, I'm not just gonna put you onto the craziest like switch of vibes. Like it's like, here's a song that you're used to, here's something new that's kind of like that, you know what I mean, to make it like less jarring.
That's true. Yeah, like you have to play to the masses of what like most people are going to be able to digest, even if you have like a small or even like a sizable subset of people who like just really want to be seeing random shit on their homepage.
Because it might be so jarring that you're like, I'm closing the app. Like, fuck this. Like,
I used to share my Spotify with my brother.
Okay, that's great.
And it took me 2 years to recover. Like it, the past two Spotify raps did not represent me to even a percent. I'm fully anticipating this third one, this upcoming year one, to now finally start to be like, this you. And I'm like, all right, thank you.
Did he have good taste?
No. Okay. No. So that's where it's just like I can never share this. Not because like I listen to like embarrassing stuff. It's just like, this is not me.
Right.
You know? And like, it's also interesting how long it takes for the algorithm to kind of like, I guess like not to personify it, but make a decision that like you are not that person anymore.
Right. I mean, it's funny because that feedback loop is so short on TikTok.
Like, right.
So I don't have TikTok, but I use Rubies sometimes. And I remember one time I was like really hungry and I watched a couple food videos, and then I kept scrolling, and 10 minutes later I realized I've only been served food videos for the past like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
But then I just like, in order to get out of that feedback loop, I just scrolled past two, and then I was like out of it, and I was on to new content.
Yeah. Yeah. Even more specific, like recently I've been watching like food videos in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And then like, it's now like specific to even neighborhoods now.
Really?
So it's just like best cafes in this neighborhood. And it's just like, wow, it's getting really, really specific.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of like I'm not like subconsciously, but I'm still aware of it. Whenever I want to like now evolve past that algorithmic suggestion, I'm like, all right, I know this is probably going to be interesting because I've been viewing this content, but I have to skip. Like it's nothing personal. I just have to let you go.
It's like new age remote viewing. Like it's just like, now that like, you transported to this spot. Like,
yeah.
Before you were saying like you watch like the videos, but like sometimes I'll like go on maps if I'm going to go someplace, and like I'll walk around the neighborhood like by dragging the little character.
Same, yeah.
And it does get weird when it's like I start like I know where a landmark is going to be. You know, like landmark.
I do that all the time when I travel. It's just like I want to feel familiar when I get out of the train to the hotel.
Yeah.
I must do this walk on Google Maps first.
Every time I'm on the train and I'm like getting off at the next stop, I go to my map and then I'm like, okay, I'm going to come out on this place, and then the KFC is going to be over there, but I have to walk like in the other direction of the KFC. And I already have it in my brain. But I think that's because I hate when you come out of the train and you're like looking around, like you have your phone and you're like, I don't know where the fuck I am.
Yeah.
I want to be able to like confidently walk in the direction that I have to go.
Yeah. Because everything else is just like, you know, there's like, we learn so much now that it's just like, I do a lot of things with confidence just because like, just like Google Maps tells me where to go. So like, you just kind of want to apply that to like every facet of your life.
Yeah,
where it's just like the discomfort of not knowing is so starkly in contrast of when you do know things, aided by like technological kind of like, you know, things. So there's so many small little habits that like, I'm like starting to feel like, I should maybe write about this and like observe, you know, how it positively or negatively and neutrally, it impacts like kind of my behavior for things.
You know what's mad funny? I don't know if y'all noticed, but like I feel like it became like a well-known thing. But like, let's say you visit like Mexico or something, like Mexico City, and like you're looking for food. Like if you don't type it in Spanish, you're gonna like find like all the spots that are like for Mad American Nights. Like, yeah. I went with my little sister and my parents, and my sister looked breakfast. So we went to a spot that was called like breakfast. Yeah. Yeah, because it was like on the craziest like algorithm like match.
Yeah, yeah.
So a little hack, like if you're gonna like go somewhere, like don't type this shit in.
Yeah,
that's so funny, but like very obvious when you say it. Or even like, Google Maps recommendations. I don't know. I find that like all of the places in New York specifically with like high ratings, they're kind of dog shit. And sometimes like I'll take a chance and I'll go to like a 3-star place. But I know that like people who are around here are like, it's the best.
Yeah, you're like, where have you been all this time?
Yeah, exactly.
Hidden behind the 4.5 stars.
That's even crazy. Hidden. People just have like terrible taste, so they just like rank it.
Or it could just be like overt, like sabotaging. It's like, yo, this is not worth the $20 you could be spending somewhere else. And it's just like kind of like making it your own cult neighborhood spot.
That's true.
While not, you know, impacting the business too much, you know?
Yeah. Like organizing.
That's crazy. It's like good, but like you could get better, you know?
Are you actively doing that?
No, of course not. Of course not.
I've never done that. Okay, you guys have to get out of here. Okay, where do people find you?
They can find us on Twitter. They can find us on Instagram. They can find us on River. The usual places.
Okay. Yeah. I'll get all of your links. On River, can you go to like, you can go to people's direct profiles?
Yeah, yeah. We just kind of like started experimenting with like profile pages and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's so early, so like search bar coming soon.
Yeah.
Search bar is on the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the next. Okay. Well, thank you guys so much for coming.
Thank you for having us. It was a good conversation. Don't stop.